Chapter 2. I think that at that time, none of us quite believed in the time machine. The fact is, the time traveller was one of those men who are too clever to be believed. You never felt that you saw all around him. You always suspected some subtle reserve, some ingenuity in ambush behind his lucid frankness. Had Philby shown the model and explained the matter in the time traveller's words, we should have shown him far less scepticism, for we should have perceived his motives. A pork butcher could understand Philby, but the time traveller had more than a touch of whim among his elements, and we distrusted him. Things that would have made the frame of a less clever man seem tricks in his hands. It is a mistake to do things too easily. The serious people who took him seriously never felt quite sure of his deportment. They were somehow aware that trust in their reputations for judgment with him was like furnishing a nursery with eggshell china. So I don't think any of us said very much about time travelling in the interval between that Thursday and the next, though his odd potentialities ran, no doubt, in most of our minds. Its plausibility, that is, its practical incredibleness, curious possibilities of anachronism and of utter confusion it suggested. For my part, I was particularly preoccupied with the trick of the model. That I remember discussing with the medical man whom I met on Friday at the Leninium. He said he had seen a similar thing at Tubingen and laid considerable stress on the blowing out of the candle, but how the trick was done he could not explain. The next Thursday, I went again to Richmond. I suppose I was one of the time traveller's most constant guests, and, arriving late, found four or five men already assembled in the drawing-room. The medical man was standing before the fire, with a sheet of paper in one hand, and his watch in the other. I looked round for the time traveller, and, "It's 7:30 now," said the medical man. "I suppose we'd better have dinner." "Where's?" said I, naming our host. "You've just come. It's rather odd. He's unavoidably detained. He asks me in this note to lead off with dinner at 7, if he's not back. Says he'll explain when he comes." "It seems a pity to let the dinner spoil," said the editor of a well-known daily paper, and thereupon doctor rang the bell. The psychologist was the only person besides the doctor and myself who had attended the previous dinner. The other men were blank. The editor aforementioned, a certain journalist, and another, a quiet, shy man with a beard, whom I didn't know, and who, as far as my observation went, never opened his mouth all evening. There was some speculation at the dinner table about the time traveller's absence, and I suggested time travelling in a half-jocular spirit. The editor wanted that explained to him, and the psychologist volunteered a wooden account of the ingenious paradox and trick we had witnessed that day week. He was in the midst of his exposition when the door from the corridor opened slowly and without noise. I was facing the door and saw it first. "Hello," I said. "At last!" And the door opened wider, and the time traveller stood before us. I gave a cry of surprise. "Good heavens, man, what's the matter?" cried the medical man who saw him next, and the whole tableful turned towards the door. He was in an amazing plight. His coat was dusty and dirty and smeared with green down the sleeves, his hair disordered, and as it seemed to me, greyer, either with dust and dirt, or because its colour had actually faded.